Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And here's something to give our moms for Mother's Day, a new set of laws. Did you know that in the UK, new mothers get 182 days of paid maternity leave? It's 154 in Italy and 90 days of paid maternity leave in China. The United States, zero. At least those stats, and we will check those stats, are in a new book called The War on Moms, On Life in a Family-Unfriendly Nation, by Sharon Lerner, who writes regularly about women in politics for The Nation. The book also seeks to break some work and family myths, like the fathers are the problem, high-end employers could solve everything if they wanted to, and a heated feud is dividing stay-at-home moms from those who work outside the home. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for coming on WNYC to talk about this.
Thanks for having me.
And first, those numbers, I got them from the press release. I don't know where they are in the book, but they seem to me so eye-popping. Is this by law in the UK, 182 days of paid maternity?
I believe so. But you know what? You look around at the rest of the world, and it is eye-popping. One of the people love to talk about Sweden because it's really it really makes us look terrible. But you don't need to look at Sweden, which is an extreme example. I'll give you their numbers in a sec. Pretty much everywhere else, the numbers are better. And we are one of a small handful of countries. It's either four or five right now in the world that don't have paid maternity leave. So, but in Sweden, let me just tell you so people out there can drool, it's 18 months paid. There's a month that's specifically for men, for fathers. And so they must, it's not, you know, swappable.
Use it or lose it,
right? And then parents there, men or women, can take until their child is eight, E-I-G-H-T, to work part-time, and they have job protection. And that's something, of course, we can't even dream about here.
And in China, 90 days of paid maternity leave in a country that still has hundreds of millions of agrarian peasants?
Right. You know, my book doesn't focus so much on China, but I can tell you, like I said, the rest of the world, I can tell you that Djibouti, the small drought-plagued African nation, tiny, tiny, poor, way poorer than we are, they have 14 weeks paid. So, you know, so basically anywhere else in the world you look, they have paid maternity leave, except for, again, this tiny handful of countries. I think it's Swaziland, a couple of others. You know, they've all figured out a way to do this, and we haven't.
So,
and one more thing, you know, what I can tell you tons about is the United States. And I traveled around meeting, you know, women who didn't have paid leave, which is about, you know, half of everybody. And the truth of that is what that ends up meaning is that many women go back to work days after giving birth, or weeks, you know, about 1-2 weeks. And, you know, obviously that flies in the face of, you know, the way we like to talk about ourselves as a family-friendly nation.
Sharon Lerner, author of The War on Moms, On Life in a Family-Unfriendly Nation. And moms, what new law would you like for Mother's Day? Let's frame the call in that way. And moms, we know you're out there, so call us, 212-433-WNYC. What new law would you like for Mother's Day? 212-433-9692. This can be a little pie in the sky for the next few minutes. This can be a wish list. 212-433-WNYC. What would make life, by law, more family-friendly in the United States of America? What new law would you like for Mother's Day? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And where do you start on the policy level, Sharon? And I realize your book is a lot about a lot more things than just maternity leave, but where do you want to start?
Well, I tend to look at three different areas. It's true, it's so broad. We need so much help. But if you look at paid leave, and we talk about maternity leave typically, but actually the leave that we would get and the leave that we now have, of course, 12 weeks of unpaid leave. And the problem with that is that it's unpaid and then it doesn't apply to everybody. But paid leave is one big area, and that would include as I said, maternity and paternity leave. Also childcare. And there are a lot of laws and policies that could shape up our child care and make it more affordable. And the other thing is flex time work. And that's a really a big thing. And you could say a fourth thing, if we had to limit it, would be health care. And we've, of course, just gotten some movement on that, which is exciting and has shifted things a bit in terms not just of women getting health care benefits, because mothers actually are more likely to be uninsured than everybody else. But also it's sort of shifted the workplace landscape, or will.
Why do I feel like we could have we could have sat here 20 years ago and had the same conversation?
Because you're right. I mean, the greatest, the closest we came to really great child care legislation was in 1971, and that was legislation that was vetoed by then President Nixon. And Phyllis Schlafly wrote this damning speech about, that used the word socialism, the term socialism, and there it went. And we haven't come as close since. With maternity leave, it's even worse. We came close in 1919. That's, almost 90 years ago. And at that time, many other countries already had it. And a lot of other countries actually did get paid leave in place at that time. So we're not just, an outlier in terms of being one of the only ones that doesn't have it. We've been an outlier for a very long time, as you said.
Joan in Manhattan, what law would you like for Mother's Day?
Oh, well, I would like to see a daycare legislation like the health care and like the annual leave, maternity leave. But I wanted to make the point that one of the reasons it's so hard to get that here is that we require the company itself to absorb the cost of this, which is why when we have the unpaid maternity and sick leave, which I think is now about 3 months where they can't fire you until 3 months.
Right.
It does not include, for example, companies with fewer than 50 employees. So
right.
Those people are not protected. Whereas in Europe, it's paid for out of taxes, the way we have, let's say, Social Security or unemployment insurance. So even if you're a corporation with, three employees, you don't have to absorb that cost mm-hmm. yourself.
Joan, thank you very much. So, I'm thinking of what the opposition rhetoric would sound like to that. Would it be something like, that would be a redistribution of wealth from people who don't have kids to people who do?
Well, yeah. I mean, what the truth is that we are seeing some states tackle this, Washington State, New Jersey. Some places have done it.
What are they doing in New Jersey?
Paid leave. But it's about 6 weeks, I hope.
Sorry, she was talking about daycare.
I'm sorry, childcare. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, the childcare, of course, should not come out of employers' pockets, But, when you look around, that's not how other countries do it, of course. And yes, I think that would be the argument against it.
Let's see. Tim in Manhattan wants to throw a little cold water on your comparison with some of the other countries. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how you doing? Comparing what laws are on the books around the world is, kind of comparing, apples and pineapples, because they may not be enforced. They may be more notional, in a lot of third world countries.
Sure. But I'm sure that we would also have the issue of enforcement to tackle once we went ahead and got these laws in place. But I'd much rather be dealing with enforcement than with the lack of a law entirely.
Monica in Brooklyn, what new law would you like for Mother's Day?
Well, I don't have the law exactly. I just feel that when I work and I freelance and I have to pay for childcare, it's just really hard, because by the time you pay for childcare, when you're not getting paid a lot of your salary, by the time you pay taxes and they pay the babysitter, ends up going to childcare. And I was reading the book, the Gail Collins book, and I can't mm-hmm. remember which country it was, because so many other countries sounded fabulous. But there is a country in Europe where stay-at-home parents actually get a salary for staying at home. And I just feel, I don't feel like a war. I mean, I freelance sometimes, but I feel like stay-at-home moms are still, it's still kind of like, oh, you're just a stay-at-home mom. And I don't think that, I think that maybe if we place more value into what it requires to be a stay-at-home mom, and if we said, well, if you stay at home, you can get a tax break or a salary or somehow make it so that it's not either work or don't work. You
accrue
know, I
Social
think
Security benefits,
well, yeah,
something.
Social Security is a big one because, of course, because women get a big fat zero for staying home, they end up more likely to live in poverty in their old age. But, you know, there are some interesting programs.
And men have this annoying habit of dying first.
There are some programs, small kind of piloty programs. I wrote about one in New Mexico where they actually, and this is for low-income moms, but, the principle could be expanded, where they take money, they actually begin to value a woman's care of her own children by taking the money that might otherwise go to subsidize the child care worker and give it directly to the mother so that she can stay home in the first year of life.
Let me touch on one of the myths. And Monica, thanks for your call. One of the myths that I mentioned that your book deals with in a chapter, the fathers are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Men are the problem.
Yeah.
And frankly, we've been hearing that for a long time, that if the laws are not going to change, women have been much faster to change than men have been to change. Women want to get out into the workplace and have a reasonable work-home balance. Men just want to go to work and pick up around the edges.
Right. Well, I mean, what I try to talk about is, certainly there's this sense, men just need to do more. Well, in the past 30, 40 years, men's wages have been falling. There have been increasing work hours for men. Life hasn't gotten any easier for men, male workers. In fact, it's gotten harder. What I talk about is the way that the laws and policies exert tension on the entire family and the entire family unit. And the other thing is that men, when they actually try to do some primary caretaking and need flexibility, run into exactly the same kind of obstacles that women do. So they end up, and I write about a couple lawsuits in the book in which men, tried to take time off to care for a newborn. In one case, his wife was sick and he wasn't able to get that flexibility and lost his job. So it's like, it's not about really being male or female. It's about a lack of flexibility for caretakers. And I should say that that extends to people who care for sick people, people other than children as well.
On our comments page, somebody writes, I eavesdropped a telephone speaker conversation in my office last week. Two men were talking about hiring young women in general, and one told the other, if you hire them too young, they might get pregnant on you, and then you're, quote, screwed. And it says, honestly, verbatim, his words. Then the other man replied, yeah, I know. That's why I'm only hiring them in their 40s. That minimizes that risk.
Right.
Discrimination against the young rather than the old.
Right, right.
The childbearing age.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is in keeping with what we're talking about, sort of instead of the glass ceiling, what a legal scholar, Joan Williams, has called the maternal wall, where basically, in terms of, for instance, pay equity, women are doing pretty well until they hit their childbearing years. And that's where we just haven't dealt with this problem as a society.
Anne in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. What do you want? What new law do you want for Mother's Day, Anne?
Hi, good morning. First of all, I can't wait to read your book. I'm a mother of four. I've been working for a major American corporation for 20 years. And boy, I feel like I could write a chapter, an addendum. It's shameful the way childcare is looked upon in this country. It is, the maternity leave is a complete and total joke. I worked part-time several times during my career to be with my children, and it actually worked against me because when I then had my next two, my maternity leave had been reduced to almost nothing. I had two paid weeks, and after working for this company for 20 years, so there's a tone that I think corporations know that what they can get away with, and I just think, I've done part-time, full-time combinations, and the joke in my house was that our nanny was making more than both my husband and me, because at the end of the day, I can completely identify with your previous caller. There's nothing left over. So there's no incentive to continue working. Yet, often families need two incomes, and it's a real quandary. And I'm telling you, the stress that it puts on American families is something that this current administration really should evaluate. I don't know if anyone has done studies, but it's not serving our children, the future leaders of our world. And, you know, in the United States of America, of all places, we need to take a page out of all these other countries' progressive books, even Canada. Start with Canada. You keep your job for a year. You get an extended leave. Something's got to be done. It's a real crisis.
And thank you very much for your call. Rick in Aberdeen wants to use this conversation and Anne's cri de coeur to take a shot at a certain Republican politician, and you can almost guess who it is. Hi, Rick. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I appreciated the way your guest started out by saying that we Americans like to talk like we're the greatest family-centered society around, but Sarah Palin returned to work as governor of Alaska days after the birth of her special needs child, and that just sounds totally ridiculous, and I'd like to know what your guests would have to say about that.
Let me get that response because our time is running short.
Well,
and wouldn't feminists rally around that decision?
Listen, whatever Sarah Palin wants to do with her family life is good with me. What I take away from the whole Sarah Palin business is that, look, she's, you know, she was anyway a governor. She's a woman with a lot of resources. She had at the time a stay-at-home husband, and she has money. So she basically, in some ways, can buy her way out of these problems as much as anyone can.
Or
and
really,
yet,
another thing, I mean, to defend Sarah Palin too much, but she has, you know, she got so much criticism for leaving the governorship. But she left the governorship and then was able to make enough money to actually be a quote-unquote working mom of a special needs child.
But what I wanted to say is that, look, I think she was struggling. It seems, you know, from the outside she was struggling. If she's struggling with a staff and a stay-at-home, you know, husband, other family members supporting her and lots of money, what about the rest of us?
There you go.
Right?
Yes. So she should be asked that question to say, well, if it was so hard for you, of course, she wouldn't admit that that's the actual reason that she left. But I think that was a core reason that she left, that she was just going to be much more comfortable. So why don't these policies get passed in a country whose politics like to harp on how pro-family we all are?
Yeah, well, I confess it's a bit of a mystery even to me after thinking about it for 4 years. But I think that, you know, there obviously we've had big pushes. We've come close. I think there I think it's all possible. And I think we haven't been there because of the political strain of that views help for families as un-American. You know, that basically the conservative strain that frowns upon helping families. And I think that we have come very close in the past, but and we need to keep pushing policy-wise, but we do also need to think about a cultural shift.
Should we take one more? Meta in Edison. What new law would you like for Mother's Day?
Yeah, hi, Brian. Interesting topic. I actually would like a law that will allow the working moms to get this unpaid 12-week period without forfeiting their vacation time and their, you know, personal time if their company allows one. What I know is that in some companies, I don't know what other companies, but if you want to, you know, benefit from that 12-week unpaid, you're supposed to first let go of your remaining or your accrued vacation time and your, you know, personal time. So what happens is if you basically are, you know, requiring to use that later in the year, it depends when your kid is born, but you just lose that. And the whole purpose of getting that is lost.
I have
a
friend who's
losing ground over there.
Thank you for your call. I have a friend who's a new mother who's doing exactly that right now. She got whatever maternity leave she got, and then she's burning through her accrued vacation time and her accrued sick time and, you know, stretching it out that way. But then there's no vacation time left.
And then you think about the fact that she is in the half of private sector workers who this law applies to in the first place. And then you take that half and you cut off another substantial minority who can't, use it even though it applies to them because they can't afford to use it. So it's really a minority of people who get the 12 weeks.
And finally, Rosalie on our comments page writes, I would love a new law for Mother's Day for New York City mothers that requires all rentals to have a washer and a dryer in the apartment. That is about as big as I will let myself dream.
Oh, that's sad. Okay.
And that is... Go ahead.
We should talk about a New York City law that actually might help mothers, which is the paid sick leave. And we're actually having a forum about that on the news at the New School, 8:30 on a week from Wednesday.
And that is, of course, something we've talked about before on the show and will again as this is coming up before City Council, which is actually going to consider that law for New York. Sharon Lerner, freelance reporter who writes frequently on family issues for The Nation, among other places. Her new book is called The War on Mom. By the way, that's a strong word, war. Mm-hmm. Is there a war?
Oh, gosh. You know, I've gone back and forth about this. You know, I think there's an external system of hostility. You know, is it a war? Is it a war? In some ways, it is. And I think it's, you know, the word war is a wake-up call to people to see this problem as external and not caused by themselves, which
is it for companies, for business lobbies to see this as internal rather than external? Who's the warrior on the other side mainly?
I think that it's the government that needs to come to step in. It's not, and it's the failure on the part of government and then by extension companies.
The War on Moms, on life in a family unfriendly nation. And Sharon will be doing an event on Tuesday of next week.
Yep.
That's the 11th. Where is that?
At Three Lives Bookstore. I'll be reading at 7 p.m. at Three Lives Bookstore in West 10th.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we will get to those most influential thinkers next. Time Magazine has a list of the most influential people. And one of the categories is thinkers. And we're going to do a call in on that one. Who are the most influential thinkers in your life right now? 212-433-WNYC. How about thinkers deserving of wider recognition? 212-433-9692. Let's think about thinkers and give them a shout out. 212-433-9692, the public intellectuals who influence you.